Welcome to Steppin' Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon.
Hi, everybody. My name's Sue Supriano, and my guests today are Deborah Kaufman and Alan Snitow. They are filmmakers, and I know Alan because he also was a radio producer, maybe still is, I don't know. But anyway, we're going to be specifically talking about your recent film called Secrets of Silicon Valley. And I saw it a while ago, you say it was just recently on PBS. And The Secrets of Silicon Valley is about, an expose really, about Silicon Valley and the kind of the dirty side of computers and the laborers there. So why don't you just start out by telling people, you know, what made you do this film and something about it?
Well, it somewhat came out of our last film, which was called Blacks and Jews. And in that film, we realized that there were issues of class that we hadn't been able to really address. So we were looking for a way of taking a look at class issues, which are largely denied and a taboo in the United States. And we realized that right in our backyards, because we live in the San Francisco Bay Area, was sort of the what was being touted as the big experiment in free, you know, the free market in capitalism at its most wonderful, and its as a classless idea of capitalism, that anyone could make $1 million or $1 billion if they had a good idea and they worked hard and they came to Silicon Valley and got into high tech. And so we wanted to examine this myth, which was being enormously pushed in the media at the time because of the enormous boom that was going on in Silicon Valley, a boom that's since ended. And we found two incredible young community activists and leaders who brought us other sides of the story that were not being told. One was creating a community center in East Palo Alto, which is an extremely poor minority community, immigrant community, right next door to, if not the wealthiest, one of the wealthiest suburbs in the United States, Palo Alto, which is one of the centers of high tech and with a hometown of Hewlett-Packard and Stanford. And then our other story was of a young man who was a temporary worker who got a job in a factory making Hewlett-Packard printers in San Jose. And his story was one of what is work becoming like in this new economy that's supposedly being created and the whole underclass that exists of people who are not represented in the media but are the new working class of this country, which is mostly female, very often foreign, no job security, and are temporary workers who can be hired and fired at will without a moment's notice.
So it's kind of like a sweatshop, basically.
Yeah, the people there call it the high-tech sweatshops. So it's not what you see in the rest of the media, because especially during the boom, the media was covering all the young people who were becoming entrepreneurs and millionaires and doing work in either research and development of software or that kind of thing, marketing. But in fact, we talked to somebody who said the setup for Silicon Valley was a little bit like feudalism, that it was people in the castles who were, which are the name companies like Oracle and Hewlett-Packard and Cisco and these companies, people on the inside who are getting the privileges of, you know, full-time employment and health benefits, and at that time stock options were a big thing, versus the people on the outside of the castle, outside of the moat of the manpower companies that were really the masses of people who you see if you live here and you're driving around, who are working without any job security and without very good pay. A lot of people are making like $6.50 or $8 an hour, which in the Bay Area is really impossible to live on. So they'd be driving in like 60 miles from outlying areas and working difficult, you know, early morning, late night shifts, often having to have multiple jobs off, very often living multiple families within one apartment that was made for one family. So, you know, crowded together in bad conditions. And then on top of that, the safety hazards at work, which are, you know, legion. And in the high-tech industry, there's been not that much talk about the dangers of what goes, the chemicals that are used in the electronics industry in terms of the production and the circuit boards and this kind of thing. And, you know, we think that there will be a kind of ongoing trouble emanating from the health and safety issues from the electronics industry.
Yeah, there is just starting to be some awareness even of getting rid of all this toxicity. And I can imagine the people who work with it are so affected. Well, I have to let the audience know that I saw this film quite a while ago, so I don't remember the details, but I wanted to do the interview about Secrets of Silicon Valley because it made a big impression on me at the time. And I was telling everyone they should see it. And particularly this young man, Raj Jayadev, it was just a very impressive speaker. And is so often the case, there's a lot of really well-educated, smart, articulate people who have very low-paid jobs, which is goes right along, I guess, with your issue of class, because so many people have such prejudices against people who, you know, think people with high-paid jobs are smart and people with low-paid jobs aren't. Did you want to say something, Alan?
Well, you know, Raj is a college graduate, an activist, and he came back to his hometown because he grew up in San Jose and wanted to check out what was going on in these factories that he'd only heard about. So he's probably not quite the same as other people who are in the factory with him, but you do get a big mix. And one of the things that we've always been a little frustrated about with very often with sometimes with people on the left or liberal people in the United States is that they discount there are large numbers of working class intellectuals who don't necessarily always have formal education or often do have formal education, but are not people who are lawyers or professors or doctors or business people. And if you and there are a lot of people who don't make those choices, and so are dealing all the time with a certain kind of class condescension that goes on because of the choices that they've made. And sometimes these people become the leaders of unions or community organizations, which are trying to make social change because they are seeing things that are not being seen by the people who supposedly have all the education, who are blind. You know, there are a lot of blind people. There are a lot of people with very high college educations who are buying Enron stock. Who were saying that this is the second coming. There were a lot of people who were buying stock in all of these dot-com companies in Silicon Valley. And Enron, in some sense, is the next phase of the crack-up of the high-tech industry. It was doing a great deal of, you know, internet trading and controlling of power in the world, and use a great deal over the internet, and was using high-tech resources. And along with using high-tech in this way came this kind of myth-making, where the media was not critical. The government was in your pocket because you lobbied like crazy and spent a lot of money on candidates. And as a result, you controlled all the sources of information even though the internet, of course, is a free source of information for many, many people. But there were very few critical voices out there, and the critical voices had to come from people, whether they are working, you know, working class or college-educated working class or middle-class people, who are willing to sort of break through and say that this reality, there's another reality here. And many of these people don't have a voice usually. We wanted to give them one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that reminds me that, you know, one of the prevailing ideas of the time a few years ago was that risk was everything, that the people who took the greatest risks were, you know, the heroes of our society. But those risk takers seem to be defined only as the entrepreneurs who were doing startups, and that never really included people who were doing community organizing, particularly somebody like Raj, who was working on working people's rights on the job in an area which is deeply anti-union. Silicon Valley is deeply libertarian in its kind of ethos, and against government and any kind of regulation, and very anti-union. And so the people who choose to do organizing not around individual gain but around community advancement, I think, are really the risk takers, because they're going against the general ethos of that community. They're really having to step out and do something different and, be different and go against the prevailing norms. And so they're heroes to us. And they had small successes over the 1.5 years that we filmed them. Plugged In had been evicted at the beginning of our filming sequence for Secrets of Silicon Valley and had to launch a capital fundraising campaign and move across town. And it was very difficult, as most people know, for nonprofit organizations, whether they're doing drug rehab or whether they're doing what Magda was doing, which was a serving as a community center for computer training. It's very, very hard to find the resources to support this kind of work. And she was able to. And Raj had been laid off in the course of our filming the movie Secrets of Silicon Valley. And because he was laid off as a result of his complaining and organizing around health and safety issues, he made a case before the California State Industrial Relations Committee and over time won his case, which is very unusual. There's, you know, huge bureaucracy and lots going against people who raise cases like this, but he won. So in effect, we were really happy to see that the subjects of our film were able to take these risks, go against the establishment, and make small gains.
Yeah, really well. And in these times, it's as these times move along, it becomes a greater and greater risk to be any kind of activist. And historically, I'm glad you're making this point, because of course it is a risk. And the kind of picture that the media paints, if they include it at all, the corporate media, of people who are activists in movements is usually negative. So, and of course, I love that bumper sticker that says something about the labor movement, the people that brought you the 8-hour day, because there is not as much appreciation as there should be, and I guess the unions are really have really decreased a lot. And so in terms of protection for working people, for low-paid working people, it's really not much happening, and it's all mixed in with immigration issues. You talk about your film Secrets of Silicon Valley being addressing the issue of globalization on our own doorsteps. And I usually think of globalization, the effects of globalization, even though I know they happen in the United States. I interview people from other countries often about that issue. So would one of you like to comment? Alan Stittow.
Well, one of the things that you, if you went into Raj's factory in San Jose, you would see a United Nations. This is a factory where there were Indians, Ethiopians, Malaysians, Filipinos, Mexicans, El Salvadorans, people from Poland. The world was represented in this factory. And so globalization is not just factories going to China, for example. It's also people coming here. And in the past 10 years, there's been an explosion of immigration. The largest immigration since the beginning of the 20th century has happened in the 1990s. Enormous flood of people in, and that's also globalization. It's the movement of people as well as products and factories and jobs. And what is happening is that any kind, so this is one of the things that we wanted to, you know, also bring out, that globalization is all around us. It's not just over there somewhere. You know.
And sweatshops happen in the United States as well as over there.
Yeah, I mean, the issue of the race to the bottom that people talk about when factories are leaving, you know, the United States and either going to Mexico or Asia, is happening here also in terms of the outsourcing and the rise in temporary work as a result of outsourcing. This is a phenomena that we feel is led by the electronics industry, which is high tech. And the electronics industry is the number one manufacturing industry in the world now. And there really in the forefront of this new form of kind of corporate, identity, which has to do with keeping, you know, some people, very few people inside doing the research and the marketing, and everybody else who's doing the creation of the products, the manufacturing of the products, the everything that you use, from your printer to your cell phone to your computer, you know, every electronic instrument that we all use in our daily lives is put together by human hands. But they're not on the payroll of the main company. They're on the payroll of a company like Manpower, a staffing agency. And this new formulation is really part of what globalization is all about, and this what we call, it's been known as, you know, the race to the bottom. Wages going down, labor being unprotected, and, unsafe working conditions and no rights.
It seems to me that I've heard that Manpower is the biggest employer in the United States now. Yeah.
Well, that's what I've heard. Actually, I've heard the biggest employer in the world, but it's Manpower. Sometimes it's one of the other temporary firms, Deco. Sometimes it's Walmart. I suppose it depends on how you're defining it. But this is, and the United, it's not just the United States. I mean, France is the largest franchise of Manpower. There's an enormous explosion of temporary work in Europe. When you've got a temporary job in Europe, you're not, you know, you don't have the rights that the social democracy in Europe and many European countries supposedly guarantees you about against layoffs and other kinds of benefits. And so what we're seeing very often in Europe is that they said the recent New York Times piece said that 9 out of 10 new jobs created in the 90s in Europe were either temporary or part-time. That was their way of avoiding the social democratic kinds of gains made by strong labor movements and left-wing parties that are in governments in Europe. It's as if once the wall fell, and got rid of communism, now the next step is to get rid of social democracy and really many rights that have existed for working people so that they could get pensions or they can get health care, and cutting back on all of those social benefits. And that's happening even in Europe, where there are more defenses and stronger labor movement, and of course it's happening here on a massive scale as well.
Yeah, just to add to that, personal note is that our film played on television, on public television in the United States, but it also played in Europe, in several countries. And as a result of that, there's been an invitation to us to bring the film and go around with the telecommunications workers and the steelworkers unions in Germany, because these issues are very relevant globally. It's not just in the United States where these temporary work issues, as Alan was saying, it's and we're getting a sense of it globally just in terms of the response to our film.
Mm-hmm. That's why we call it corporate globalization. And the name of the film that we're talking about is Secrets of Silicon Valley. And my guests are Alan Snitow and Deborah Kaufman. So I would imagine also, because you're talking about all the immigrants that work in the film that you did, so Secrets of Silicon Valley, and in the computer industry, their electronics industry, that's even more scary for people to, even more risky for people to take a stand and to make any kind of struggle.
One of the people who was one of the fairly early people to study what is going on in the electronics industry, Karen Hosfeld, she's a professor at San Francisco State, interviewed a number of managers of companies in Silicon Valley. And one of them said to her, in terms of the people, in terms of their manufacturing process, that what we are looking for is small, foreign, and female, which is the name of her forthcoming book on the subject. They're looking for largely, you know, Asian or Latina women who are immigrants and do not have security. Who can be easily intimidated by white managers, who can be scared because sometimes they don't have documents to be in the United States, or who can be scared because they don't know what their rights are. And it's not exactly as if the federal government these days or the state governments are going into factories and giving seminars on the rights of workers. But you do have managers getting seminars all the time about the ways to keep a union-free environment, or the ways to keep unions out of your factory, or to intimidate your workers, or to fight any kind of organizing that's going on. So it's a tremendously, you know, one-sided kind of battle that takes place. And one of our big problems was to find people who are willing to talk in this kind of atmosphere, because they could be laid off and they had so little job security. Who could articulate what they were seeing and the kind of conditions that they were working in, which were also sometimes very dangerous conditions. People think of the image of high tech as of this clean industry, and you see the Intel ads of people dancing in their bunny suits, full covering, but those bunny suits are to protect the chips, not to protect the workers. Semiconductor manufacturing is one of the most chemical-intensive industries in the world. They use thousands of chemicals, and most of those chemicals are untested in terms of what their impact is on human health.
I don't remember, but did you run into a lot of health people who were affected, their health was affected?
Well, one of the groups that we spoke with throughout the production of the film was the Silicon Valley Toxics Coalition, which is very active in organizing both mainly in Silicon Valley, but now also globally because of the results and effects of toxins on the jobs and increasing cancer rates amongst people who work in, for instance, semiconductor and silicon chip manufacturing. But one of the discoveries that we made is that the Silicon Valley area has the highest number of Superfund toxic sites in the country. And this is from the chemicals that were poured into the water supply early on before there were more regulations about this. But it's not just the production. It's also the result of getting rid of your home computers, your personal computers. The numbers, I think, it's the millions of computers that are, becoming obsolete every year that are just thrown into landfill, where the poisons of and the lead and different chemical compounds in the computers are just kind of drifting into the water table with no protections for the environment and for people who are drinking the water supply. So it's really serious on both ends of the production and then the final use end of computers in terms of what we're doing to the environment and how we're increasing cancer, basically. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, early on when we first put the film out, somebody in the audience raised their hand and asked, can you get a union-made, non-toxic, environmentally safe computer? And the answer is no, certainly not in the United States. So, this is an industry that in many respects is out of control, but it has enormous image-making control. And that has been one of the real powers of this sort of phase of the economy of corporate globalization that is going on, is really controlling the media agenda and how issues are presented.
Yeah. Well, your film Secrets of Silicon Valley, what's happening with the distribution, and how are people responding to it, and what positive things are happening?
It's been great since we brought it out about a year ago. It played in theaters in the Bay Area for quite some time, much to our surprise, because it's a one-hour documentary that we didn't think would be able to make it into the theaters. But since then, it's been in some festivals, but it was also broadcast on public television in the fall of 2001 and throughout Europe. And now we're working with a lot of community groups, primarily with the National Alliance for Fair Employment, which is a coalition of about 50 groups working a lot on issues related to the expansion and acceleration of temporary work. And we're traveling with the film and going around talking about the issues that are related to temporary work, but also to the digital divide and the toxics issues, in order to, you know, raise public consciousness around these issues that I think really were... People suspected there was trouble in the electronics industry and high tech, but I think these issues hadn't really been concretized for people to see, and I think our film kind of helps do that. Also, the film, we didn't say it, but it's kind of funny also. There's a lot of fun in the film itself. It's not anti-technology per se. We use the technology. It's really about a critique of the control and the ways in which technology is controlled.
I remember I really enjoyed it a lot, and I was telling everybody, see it, see it, see it, and I'm sorry it's taken so long to get around to actually interviewing you here. So have you been getting always, like, really, I mean, I'm sure it's a great consciousness raiser. I know it is. Secrets of Silicon Valley, will it be coming to the neighborhood of the listeners?
It'll be coming to a number of neighborhoods. NAFI, which is a group called the National Alliance for Fair Employment, is a new organization, a coalition of some more than 50 groups around the country dealing with issues of temporary work. And they want to take the movie and us on the road around the country to do community screenings to support the organizing work that's done by their coalition partners in this group. It's actually a new organization because temporary work has really exploded. It's tripled in the United States in the past 10 years. So they want to get the word out, and so it will be going out. We don't have the cities the schedule yet of cities. We'll be getting that in the not too distant future.
But we have a website also that is secretsofsiliconvalley.org, which has a lot of information. We're going to be putting up a study guide for classroom use. We have a distributor for classrooms. It's called Bullfrog Films, and they're at www.bullfrogfilms.com. And, you know, they have different rates for community groups and colleges and universities and libraries, and are real easy to work with. So that would be a way of obtaining the film.
Okay, that's great. Bullfrog Films, BULLFROG, films, all one word, .com. And so that's really good. I noticed that, of course, young people, of which I am not one, and really, of course, naturally wouldn't really understand that it wasn't always this way, because this is the way it's been in their lives. And a lot of the people who work in all parts of the high-tech field are young. So it's particularly important to have this way of educating.
Well, Raj is working with other young temporary workers and putting out a publication for the young and the temporary, it's called Silicon Valley Debug, and which has an online version at Silicon Valley Debug, debug.org, on the web. And it's a wonderful publication, but more and more young people, when they're getting into the economy, getting jobs for the first time, can only get temporary jobs. And very often now that it's not even when you're so young that you have a temporary job. It's moving up as this generation of new workers gets older. Their expectations are going to be that they're going to be having temporary jobs, because that's where things are, and maybe they can get a permanent job at some point in the future, but it's going to be very tough.
Well, thank you very much, Alan Setow and Deborah Kaufman, for doing this film, Secrets of Silicon Valley, and for doing this interview. My name's Sue Supriano. Thanks very much for listening.